and bourbon breweries?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, we're rolling.
Peach, take it away.
All right. We're Napalm Pom. Welcome to the audio commentary track for our debut album, The Unconditional Love of Napalm Pom. This is an idea we stole from Chicks Dig It.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I don't want to do this.
All right. Should we introduce ourselves? You start, Matt.
Hi, I'm Matt. Fewer Rural Breweries.
What do you play?
I play the drums.
I'm Ian. I'm not saying that. I play the bass.
Sean, I play the guitar not as well as Craig.
That's a lie.
Say your lie.
Fewer Rural Breweries.
Fewer Rural Breweries. Fewer. I'm Craig. I can't say that. And Peach, you know Peach.
And me, I'm Peach. And then, Laura, you're here too.
I'm here too.
Yeah.
I play the cheerleader.
Yeah, and keys.
Spiritual advisor.
And acoustic guitar.
Maraca things.
Oh, right, acoustic guitar.
Yeah. And more raucous.
Eggs.
You do play some percussion too.
Yeah. And backup vocals.
Actually, your percussion is not on. Yeah.
It's kind of like Laurie Matheson featuring your pom-pom.
Laurie Matheson presents The Unconditional Love.
Yeah, that's right. And the Laurie Matheson players.
Players?
Who's playing? So, okay, I don't even know the running order is.
Yeah, first.
Okay, guided by volume.
Guided by volume.
We'd start with that. Whose dumb idea was
this? So whose favorite is this?
This is my favorite. Seriously, it's like such a great opening.
It is a really good opening.
And like, considering we came up with it for like, when we first started playing, it was just this like first little bit and that was it. It was like an intro or to one other song we did, wasn't it?
It was me singing in front of my computer, being frustrated that I couldn't write a solo. Song. And then I wrote this
little
riff
by
accident.
It's
like,
good.
Oh, this is really good.
What I like about it too is it's the economy that you're not usually known for. Like the arrangement and the notes and everything is like, it's perfect. It's space.
Okay, so it's your favorite film. Song. Craig says it's perfect.
Yes.
It's perfect.
Yeah, it's a perfect song. It's my favorite song.
Wow.
When I was like, I don't know, 14. 15, I saw the video for London Calling by The Clash, and the way they march up to the mic, and then they all just spit, and that's how it scared the shit out of me, but it gave me this exhilarating feeling, and that's what the beginning of this song was like for me.
It's
the same kind of exhilaration, right?
So what you're saying is, I'll never write a better song than the first one I ever wrote.
Yeah,
this is his
first song.
First song.
Well, yeah, you need to vote for sure. With
the all it took was a half bottle of whiskey and a vague notion that it was going to be about time travel.
Is that what it's about?
It started off, I was like, this one, I could hear it. Like, okay, so when you guys were doing the demo, I said to Craig, I was like, you got something? All I know is that I can hear the end in my head.
Yeah.
I was like, write that down, that's good.
Yeah.
And then I kind of took that home and it was bound and determined that at some point he was going to get to that point because I had the have yous at the end.
Yeah.
It'll be about time travel. I can hear the end in my head and have you and it'll be about time travel.
Yeah.
And then I started writing it and I was like, no,
it's
not about time travel.
I also like...
But it kind of maybe is about time travel.
It kind of
is. It's construed as
much. Maybe. I don't know.
Did you have the title first?
No. The title was like the second working title for it.
The title came from me wanting to start a Guided by Voices cover band and it would be called Guided by Voices.
That's
fair. You like never had the song totally had was like an idea for something else? That's good.
Well, this is one of those working titles that just didn't get replaced. Because it was called Vinyl Scott O'Reilly and then it became Guided by Volume.
I don't think there was ever a debate about whether we were going to rename it after Guided by Volume.
Yeah, I think it's a good
one. Like, so much, that's a tattoo.
Yeah.
Three members have a Guided by Volume?
Listen to the acoustic guitar, how it just like cuts through.
Who's fantastic.
What's
good
that?
Work, Mark.
That
That'd be me.
Oh. Do you remember my ringing endorsement after you recorded it?
No.
It was like the last thing we recorded at like 2 a.m.
When, the last time we recorded on the record, right?
I think on the record. And I was the only one here with you. Yeah. And you played it, and I was really excited that you were adding acoustic guitar. And then it took a while to get, like, everything set up. And by the time you actually nailed the take, I think, like, I was originally at the end of the song going, nailed it. Yeah. Just in the most unenthusiastic tone possible. Nailed it. Can I go home now?
This is the closest to Brian May's guitar tone I've ever done.
Yeah.
It's perfect. Okay.
I do have the Vox with one knob. There's a bunch of knobs, but only one works.
The tone is perfectly what I said it at some time when I stopped working.
Yeah, this is the riff. Oh. When we decided to be a real band. When we decided we were going to stop being a Chickaboo cover band.
Yeah.
When we realized that our stay as a Tricky cover band had come to an end, and then decided to become, this riff was written the next day.
Because this is what's funny about this, is that I remember having a very distinct discussion with you guys about being like, playing the first show, and then we just, do you guys want to start like, keep going? And then Craig would be like, we don't write songs. We can't write fucking songs, we can't write songs.
I said that?
You totally said that.
What a weird thing we're going to say.
But also the first time, I also remember the first time I came in and heard the vocals for this. And I was like,
yeah.
Like mind-blowingly good.
Laura, you're the magic man behind that, those fucking harmonies. Everyone laughs because I tell them that's you and me doing like three or four different versions of that harmony on the vocals.
Nine vocal tracks?
30 vocal tracks.
Well, because we doubled and tripled stuff, right?
So absolutely.
We could sing each part, figure out the part, sing it, triple it, then go to the next part. Oh, and the TNT.
Yeah, it's all Craig.
I love those.
Also, shout out to like Ian Day for the rock and roll savant, just doing whatever I want.
Yeah.
Pretty great, man. You did good.
But yeah, we just like stacked them, like like Boston style, right? It was just like...
You were like the little elite. You were sitting, you're at the desk, and you just kind of turned around with your little cigarette, and you're like, I hear Boston. let's go, man. Let's see how weird this will get.
And Laurie, I have to apologize to you for ever thinking that when the bass came in a little while ago, that should be fixed.
Because
it shouldn't have been fixed.
Because being one beat off turned out to be...
We're just keeping it.
I was like, I didn't like it, but now I just think it's great.
I can't believe how long and hard it took me to struggle with this rudimentary solo.
It's My Sharona though. It's got the same vibe as the album version of My Sharona.
It's actually like, note for note the My Sharona.
But it has to be perfect. You know what I mean? You can't it's simple. Yeah. But it has to be perfect. You can't just toss that off. It didn't take that long.
It took over an hour.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And there's proof.
Let's talk about this. Let's
tell the story.
What's amazing about this is that it happened, 5 months after the flood? When you would have heard something like that. It was, a couple months?
Yeah, it was in August, right?
It was that train wreck.
The
train wreck, which is I can throw a rock and hit with a train wreck.
Yeah, and we derailed it with a riff.
Yeah. I tried to get in the studio, and it took an hour to get here to get around all the roadblocks.
Well, Sean was here. You know, you guys weren't here, just me and Sean.
Yeah, but I got here later. But it took so long to get here because all the rains was shut off.
Yeah.
I had to sneak through, talk my way through roadblocks to get here, and then the helicopter came over saying it was, it was apocalypse.
Evacuation order in effect.
Yeah.
The thing is that we didn't even know that it happened.
Yeah.
Because we were in here with listen to these guitars, they were loud. You know? And then we went outside just to get a breath of fresh air or something, and it was silent. And then this helicopter starts flying over. We missed the crash is literally 200 yards from here. Yeah. We did not even know it happened. And then I was like, we gotta record this.
Yeah. This is our smoke in the water, man. Actually, I don't
know. Is that good or bad? This is way better than smoke on the water.
Yeah, And yeah, I guess lyrically another Ian Day song, basically about his rather pessimistic view of humanity and how we're basically going to fade away and die.
That's how a good rock and roll should be.
Yeah, so it's one of the like two on the record that's not about girls.
It sounds like it's about drugs.
Which still is it, but it sounds like it.
And I love it. This is actually my favorite song.
This one, kind of, yeah, this is a really good song.
See, also, I remember this. Like, I was thinking we were verging into Miami Vice soundtrack here with this guitar, with this
electronic opera drums.
Awesome.
But then we saved it somehow.
What I love about that solo, that solo, and there's a couple other ones in the album too, is that they're so much louder than everything else. I fucking think it's like a brilliant way.
I got it.
It's just like this not all this like crazy about guitar, but it's also one of the main things. It was,
but I don't, that doesn't upset me anymore either. But all the things that I was frustrated with when we were mixing, or not frustrated with, but I was like, I don't like this. I like it now, so.
You but like right. That's the hallmark of great rock and roll records is when like this guitar solo just jumps out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Though.
Yeah. Just like makes
this is my favorite song.
Really?
Tell us about it.
Tell us
I'm
about
just
tell
like,
us about the
why
song.
Why it's your favorite song?
It's yeah. It's an interesting one to pick as your favorite.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because this Craig's rhythm guitar thing.
He stole from you.
No. The first time I heard you guys play this song, I was not expecting this beauty. It's beautiful.
Oh, nice.
Like it's like it's Baroque in a way. It's like it's informed by like flat classical baroque. Music. It's like a Rush. Like man, you know, whatever Rush, but like
it
a Farewell to Kings. How there's like this like Baroque classicalness to Farewell to Kings. That's what this is. And it's like, I don't know, like, you could see, like, a princess and a knight, like, prancing through the forest, right?
That's a good idea.
Or Rocket Richard.
Or Rocket Richard.
Yeah.
And walking the forest with a candle up your
and then this, all that, like, when that came in, it was just like, oh my god, where is this going? And then, like, you know, like, the band is, like, building this thing up. And it was like we saw the concert, well, most of us saw the Constantines last night, and like, you know, the Constantines have this ability to just like, your breath is like at the top of your chest, like the whole time you're just waiting, what's gonna happen?
And then it happens.
But then, this is not what I thought was gonna happen.
No, then we take like the most like grunty,
yeah.
Like,
and then it turns into this minor like, threat, yeah. You know, like.
I would like to say it's more Black Flag than Black Flag.
Well, yes, yeah, it is more Black Flag. But it's like, it's totally not expected at all.
It's not expected because we didn't know what to fucking do.
It's also very limited vocabulary, and this is what we came up with.
It's also not expected because it was originally supposed to be like a 20-minute rock opera, so that probably would have been a more subtle transition at that point. There's a lot more parts.
I will say it is my favorite song to play, though. I love that. My drum beat is very, like, absolutely ripped it off of a Black Flag song.
Well, it makes sense considering the title.
Alright, this part coming up to you, like, everybody thinks of it, it's the whoa, whoa, whoa. There's actually a lyric here.
Yeah.
The longest time I thought it was just a whoa, whoa.
One. Oh. You. And. Me. Thing.
So, if you want us along, it's
yeah, so, goddamn it.
Sorry, Craig. I've just been thinking, whoa, that's a problem.
I always thought it would show as well.
But then putting the sample into the sample. Back to the sort of, like, just, you know, Craig explained the words to me, what, like, you know, the whole, what was it? Some online forum
message
thing?
Board, yeah.
Message board thing.
It was basically about how this guy, it was looking at a, it was a, It was Mike Halinchuk from Fucked Up was doing a guitar thing on YouTube, and I was, and of course, I looked at the YouTube comments, which I never did.
Never really.
And someone said, "Who is this fucking gay blade who's using a delay pedal and a looper, and no punk, self-respecting hardcore guy would wear a collared shirt?" And then I posted up a prop picture of Black Flag, without their faces on it, and they were wearing collared shirts and sweaters, and like basically looking like a bunch of indie rockers.
Yeah.
Because they were actually kind of.
They didn't give a shit.
They just wore what they did. But it seems like I always thought about hardcore bands being way more forward thinking than their fans. Their fans are fucking rigid fucking assholes.
Yeah.
They're just like only like sleek. They're super hard, heavy, and masculine, and fucking just graphic and stupid. But meanwhile, most hardcore guys just like the fucking party. You know what I mean?
And
I just sort of made my point. And that was sort of it. It's just this weird regimented worldview that some subgenres and people who like certain music just have. And it's kind of like.
And then you bring it around with the sample from the sweater. Right. From the hockey sweater.
It's all
pitchy. Are we allowed to say that?
Punk rock. Oh, well, I already said it.
I mean, who doesn't? If you haven't seen that film, how can you not love that?
It was on the $5 bill for fuck's sake.
Yeah. So, and it's just like, it was just magical to me. And then this whole.
That reverb-y guitar is the moss in the hockey sweater coming down to the sweater. Hey, everyone laughs at me when I say that.
No, we talked about this.
Point. It made way more sense in the 2020.
I think it sounds like it should be a soundtrack to Contra.
Actually, it makes a lot of sense.
NES Contra. Yeah. Like that part where you kill the bad guy.
In this fuzz guitar tone. Remember my little amp that we had? And we just like.
Oh, yeah.
We destroyed that thing. It was blowing it up. And it's like a little 5-watt amp. It's like,
Report out of it or just
I think we just re-amped it. Yeah. But we just like, I'm surprised it's still in one piece. We really abused it.
This one in Seamstress, you use that little amp, right?
Remember this ending.
These are the moss leaving the church.
Oh,
hockey
sport. It took forever to get this ending right, too, in the mix, I remember. I'm still not sure it's totally right.
It's not totally right, but it's
it's right. Awesome. Come on.
It's still awesome.
repeated listening, things become right. That's what I find.
Yeah, it's true.
Just listen to this.
Worked for me.
Did you know I didn't like the doubled vocals on Get With Me for the longest time?
You really didn't, yeah.
What?
It was like, this really? Is awful, yeah.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, this one's an interesting story, right?
Oh, yeah, the,
Running in the Red.
Running in the Red. I wrote this in 3 minutes.
Rock Lottery.
At the Rock Lottery.
The Rock Lottery is the Sled Island thing where you draw, like, super groups out of a hat and everyone works together.
Randomly get paired up with other musicians.
And I randomly, through luck of the draw, got paired up with Craig, so.
And you had to write a 20-minute set.
Yeah.
In 9 hours?
Nine hours.
You started about 10 in the morning, and that's when you guys started drinking.
Well, that's when I started drinking.
and
we liked it.
You made a rule.
So it was me, PJ, it was Chris Neville from the Bon Jovi's Punk Keys, it was Steve Alastra on bass, and
Andy Neville.
Andy.
And Andy from Phil Fur.
Yep.
And on drums. He was adorable.
And
we were originally trying to. Our initial direction was going to be Wire. We were trying to do a Wire, like, kind of just abrupt chords.
Yeah, this sounds exactly like Wire.
Yeah,
because our band name was?
Elastic. And, so we were just. But it wasn't working. And then somehow this riff just popped out with the verses and the chorus progression. I knew immediately I was doing this.
Well, yeah, it's pretty much unchanged the lyrical melody. I changed the words.
You changed the words.
It's identical to what we did at Rockwater.
This is
almost. The breakdown.
I love the breakdown.
Cross down traffic.
A more elaborate version.
These are my favorite vocals to sing.
Stonesy.
It's totally Hendrix.
Really?
I can
just cross that traffic.
And then all of a sudden
you're gonna get the comb
this.
And the wax paper
part
and do the kazoo.
If Joe McCaffrey's listening, I stole this from a straight song when I was playing it straight. And I sped it up and changed the rhythm, so he probably doesn't recognize it anymore. It was a song that we never recorded, and we started practicing this before I left the band.
I remember turning a PJ to do this part.
It never sounded good. Yeah. So that's why it sounds so like
dissonance. Yeah, it's gonna
happen. Deep down underneath. It's different every time I've done it.
Totally, I can just hear the McCaffrey thing from this, yeah, for sure.
When you said McCaffrey, I thought you were talking about the guy behind the Indian Cruises band. What's that guy's name?
Oh. The Beaver Brown band?
Yeah. McCafferty?
Is it McCafferty?
Not McCafferty. I thought you just admitted that one of our songs was
in the spot. Oh, fuck, my man.
What about
it? It's probably true.
And McCaffrey.
Oh, here, cheers. Here's the infamous guitar solo that made that was too loud.
Yeah, I love this one.
It's so good.
It's pretty loud, but it's good. It's good. It's
not that loud.
Guitar solo. It's so fucking good.
This is louder.
It's really far.
Oh, we're so great. I'm sorry, we're excited about it.
No one else is. It's fucking, I think it's amazing.
Yeah, no one else is.
I listen to it more than anything else.
That's awesome. That's immediate, like.
Well, this is where we reamped the bass, too. There was like, we ran the bass through that little amp, too.
Yeah.
And here's the, our most.
This has my favorite PJ moment. This song has my favorite
really?
PJ
moment.
Yeah.
It's probably like, out of all the songs, it's like the most.
I think it's the most like the newer stuff too.
We had a discussion. Craig was against this being a pom pom song.
Oh. It's got the same like it's got a nice swing to it. It's actually one of our most like
that was a competition one
out of two. Hands are splashy. Holy shit!
I remember us working on this chord progression.
I feel like the Ashes to Ashes chorus is like the song. Those two, like the two matches in the song.
The Ashes to Ashes chorus, well, we can talk about that later, but it's
really love the harmonies in this
song. Yeah, the harmonies are fun.
I like this song.
Paige, what's this one about?
This is verbatim, diary entry style about a breakup. It's all absolutely literal.
I honestly think
that Chuck
wants to
tell that
shoe
story. You can tell. That's
what's so awesome about it. Oh, no. We'll get to the shoe story, but after we pause to hear Lori's favorite
My lyric, favorite Peach moment.
Which is, I think it's this,
yep. Right? Right here. Goosebumps.
This is another like, half bottle of whiskey writing session. It's just like...
But... It's not the lyric as much as the way you deliver it. There's like
vowel movement.
There's blood on your sleeve, right there.
Thank you, Lori.
Oh, dude, it's the best.
I love it.
Good. So, getting back to the shoe story.
The shoe story.
I don't even know what the shoe story.
I told it on when we played with the oh yeah. And for some reason it's become a new thing. I don't have to do it every show, do I?
Not if you do it right now.
The shoe story is, I introduce the song, and I say, you know, sometimes you go shoe shopping, you find like the most amazing pair of shoes, you just love, you know you have to have them. And all they have is a half size too small. And you're just kind of, you're not sure, maybe, yeah, you convince yourself you're gonna buy these shoes. And then you wear them for a couple of months, and then your feet start to hurt, and they're never comfortable. That song, or this song, is just like that, only it's human emotion, not shoes.
That's pretty good. Yeah. That's pretty good. Man, I haven't listened to this forever.
What have you been doing with it?
That's great. Yeah. Man, the guitars sound awesome on this, too. Yeah.
That's all you? It's the math is the magic.
That's so good.
This part.
Yeah. And this whole drum part too is like sweet.
I like the drums in this song. They're really it's very like static but like really splashy. Yeah. Got a little bit of a swing to it.
So much fuzz, so much feedback. I'm sure it wasn't fun.
It's made for like the cute pop song on the album though.
Like
I love
this
it.
Like this like holding notes like that, just that it like your amps is like pounding.
I think me and Greg were talking about kind of where our influences are. And then Craig was always just like, it's really aggravating to no one says like, you guys are really divided by voices. But I feel like a song like this is very much shows that we kind of are like Cheap Trick, divided by voices.
Cheap Trick, really, totally.
Yeah. Super fuzzy, like some
happy
songs.
Happy sweet.
Honestly, anything that's fucking fun.
But like no one like ever says that about
it. Right? Like, here's the thing about people is like people's influence.
That's
people's
also great
are really
based
on saying
that. Like, right? Holy shit.
If someone only listens to like Nickelback and Beethoven, they're gonna listen to this and go, oh, you guys don't like Nickelback. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, we were talking.
Beethoven, you're more Nickelback.
Except
than
for Greg Guinness, it kind of sounds like Beethoven.
Was it the beat? Yeah, it was when we were talking to the girl from Beetroot. I was like, if you think I'm not trying to write like a pop hit of Taylor Swift
proportions,
and you don't know me very well.
Can we pause for a second?
What?
I just really need to pee. I was like,
well, I will say that this is the
probably the song
what? Fucking guitar line like I've ever heard. It makes
the
like
beast.
When are you gonna learn so much how to play this?
Well, that's what I was gonna say. This is probably the song if you've only just recently purchased our record, there's a very good chance you've never heard this song.
the song doesn't work live very well. We can't walk in.
I've only ever seen you do it once.
Yeah, we could probably didn't do it very well. We can't get it. I don't know why.
It's
not
the tempo. It's the one. It's just it's like the parts coming out.
The transition from the chorus to
right there.
You
can't do that.
No, we can't really well. You don't do that. This part's awesome.
It's not great.
This, except for the solo, guitar wise, is note for note a song I wrote when I was 18. And I literally, like, it was written and played in the band called The Fallen Man.
Amazing.
And
this part we can't do.
I demoed it. I think I told everyone I hated it. I was like, I don't want this to be a song.
What was Blue Collar Madness? What was it?
It was five of us. I grew up in Point Clear. Five of us who worked for the Public Roads Department started a band called Blue Collar Madness, and all the songs were about the ridiculous shit that goes on at the Public Works. We had songs about like the porn you find in drugs. Totally embarrassing stuff you would write when you were 18. But this guitar part, like that whole guitar thing, has been wasted probably on a really dumb idea. So I'm happy we eventually.
It does. It is the kind of riff you would write here.
Yeah.
Sure. Like it's like so notey. Like
it doesn't make sense.
No, it's awesome.
It recorded really well. Like it's, I love it on the record. I just wish that we could. I don't know
Sean, it's funny you mentioned that though, because there's a few lines that I pulled out of an old, like, I've always carried notebooks around, but there was one that was probably like 17 or 18 that was two or three lines from the song.
This is embarrassing.
We need to bring that back. The whole thing for the song came out of a stupid idea. It was Danny Bacon, Lindsay, you and I were going to start a four guitar band.
No, a triple singer metal band.
Called Seamstress,
just because I thought it was...
Yeah,
Baroness Priestess. Yeah. I thought Seamstress was way better.
You know another good metal band
and there was like a Facebook seminar thread of like thousands of sewing puns.
The Pog. Remember the Pog adventure that night?
This song basically played itself once we plugged in the Pog.
But wasn't that you singing into your pickup through the Pog?
Yeah, I was screaming my pickups through the Pog.
How we entered? How we got to that point? Like how did we?
We did weird feedback during the monitors too.
We were gonna get the organ sound for the ending, and Craig stopped playing, and it started making it beautiful noise.
Because I wanted originally I wanted a horn section.
He was fucking around with the amp river. I don't remember.
Yeah, we wanted horns on this song.
Yeah. I'll we realize you have to.
Hold on. I'll do the horns here. But
this is not for another 4 minutes.
I know.
the chorus of the song, when we're going to like, it started off with us sitting in, basically like, what's the Stoner Rock song? Or like, trying to write a Stoner Rock
as
song.
As a joke.
As a joke. Yeah. And that's like the beginning, the total Stoner Rock. But all of a sudden, it's like, well, how are we gonna, what's next? Like, when do you come next? We come on this chorus.
Yeah,
which is like the most
song.
Like, post-rock, like,
I love it.
Like super nice pop chorus, and just like, how do you stick them together? Do you say, fuck it, just stick them together?
Yeah, here.
Oh, shit. Fuck, I freaking started.
Was this where the horns were gonna be?
Yeah.
Ba-da-ba!
Oh, right. Total slow thing, right?
It's like it's probably verbatim. Good thing we didn't do it, really.
I have to cry, but I think the organ sounds amazing. Or whatever you did to it.
It's not organ, this is all guitar.
Is that guitar?
Yeah. That was the bog experiment.
There's no organ on the guitar.
With the actual string.
No, you have keys. There's keys on this one.
It was something that Dan Electro.
I think I watched you play it.
Nope.
What?
No. There's no organ in this at all.
We were gonna use the keys to mimic the horn sound, and we never.
Oh no!
Oh no! There's a synth part underneath.
There is.
There's a synth part underneath.
See? Y'all thought I was
on the credits.
It's not. I asked you how you wanted to be credited, and you were like, "Don't put my name anywhere near." I do not want to be associated with you guys.
Okay.
See, I'm not crazy. I knew it.
We should talk about the lyrics in this one too.
Another Ian song. So you guys talk. I don't know. You guys talk about him.
Oh, well, I mean, we should have Skyped him.
We
should have
Skyped him.
Hi, Ian.
We tried. He wasn't home.
This is a spec script that apparently Nick Cave wrote for
Gladiator 2.
Gladiator 2, because him and
Russell Crowe.
Wow.
He was asked to write.
They're Australians. They're of course they're friends.
Yeah.
Australian.
Oh, I totally hear the same
thing. It's like all Canadians are friends, all Australians.
And he posted online or whatever, and
it posted a
synopsis.
Yeah, synopsis. And it is insane.
Yeah.
It would have been.
It would make
a
great
cool movie. Yeah. But it would have been very good. It had nothing to do with the first time. In total.
No. It would be definitely a reboot.
A reboot?
Are there any like Hollywood movie franchises where the first movie is like normal and then the second one is just
crazy?
I feel like there are, but I
can't. Yeah, well, actually, no, it happened in third movie. It happened in Halloween 3. Remember that one?
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah,
fair. Mortal Kombat, too.
Right. Here's the choir. Dirtbag Choir.
Shout out to the choir. Lindsay Shin, Janet Sullivan.
Peter Radke. Nicole Lefebvre. Kyle Beaver,
Turbo's dad.
Turbo's dad. I no one knows
dad,
his name.
Yeah.
Turbo's dad. I think his name is Joe. Joe Winkler.
We started naming him. Now we're forgetting these. They're all
on the album. Yeah.
Also, my favorite bass part in the whole.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. Oh man.
We never
play
this live. This way,
which
probably one day we're gonna.
You
can
play live this way,
don't you? No, this solo is
coming up.
Oh, this solo was actually originally. The solo in Faint Apart.
Yeah.
Faint Apart was a pop song with a monster solo, and I played it once for Craig. Like, I demoed it all, learned every part. Like, I think even got either you or wrote, or like, I think either you came in, wrote, and played the bass part for the solo. Whatever. We mastered this solo. Played it once for Craig, and he was like, absolutely not.
I remember me and you doing this solo for this song, writing all this.
Yeah, okay, we wrote the basics of it for this. Then I transposed it to Faint Apart, thinking we needed something totally bonkers for it.
Yeah, there's something.
Wrote it, changed the key, made it work. You were like, absolutely not. And then had to retranspose it to the original key.
And I was totally right.
And you're right.
Is he here? The worst song to mix. This song.
Okay, why?
So why? We don't play this live. We just do noise on this part.
Because it's the most.
This is the best part. We have to learn this part so we can play this part.
Yeah, this part is amazing. Part.
I don't mind playing like picking one part and doing that low. It's the 20 other parts in front of it that are.
Well, the reason we don't do it is because we know we get so bombed.
You know what it'll mean, like me doing nothing for 3 minutes,
you can
right?
Smash on a fucking tambourine.
Wait,
I have no rhythm. Yeah! You can't give me a tambourine because I can't keep time.
Maybe we could give you like a shield and a trident.
I think you should actually grab one of
the rocks right now.
I would actually see how break the time.
Yeah, there's synth in this part too. There's synth in this part too.
Are you sure?
I fucking told you!
No, it's Craig, but I'm doubling what Craig is doing.
You were doubling?
Yeah, I can hear it now.
I was there, you guys. It was great. Good work, Lori.
Remember the original aborted Ian Day sessions when there was a huge argument about how many times all of this happened.
Oh, well, because we're still learning how to play.
This is like the rhythm in this part. Like, I still maintain this is the most difficult thing we've ever had to learn. because the way I play it is completely actually different from the way they play, the way I interpret it. And I had to be like, explain to them how it worked for me, and they never got it.
Because you play off beats and we play off accents.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is all, yeah, it's like I said before, it was like, this is like math rock in an accounting sense where you subtract from column A to put the column B.
But it's like, what was your line?
This is the glory of the pog right here.
Math rock?
This is the pog.
I know, I love it. It's like angels descending.
It's not moths. It's more of an angels.
Yeah.
Well, it's sort of demons, actually. It's way more demonic.
It's like if you had an inflatable demon, you were like an Aaron.
This is
crazy. So it goes on, like, on the original. Like, this goes on for, like, another 7 minutes after this. Like, we just went forever.
How much is a pog? $300?
That one...
The reason you didn't buy one...
pog is, like,
the reason,
cheap.
But the reason you didn't buy one is there's all those, like, holes in it, and you were worried about a beer.
There's no holes in the mini pog.
Yeah, I'll just
buy
one. No, the big one.
Oh, the one that I use in Nightmare?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like $350.
Oh, here we go.
With all the sliders? All
right, this is it. This is our goodnight now, ladies and gentlemen. Cheap Trick version. This is the Cheap Trick.
My...
Come again?
Okay, so now also, if you ever see us play live, you've never actually heard this tempo. Because this is like about 4 to 5 times slower than what we actually play.
Is it?
Yeah.
I never noticed.
Sean dared me to write this song. How did that happen? Write me a song right now.
So you wrote Cold Sweat by Thin Lizzy.
By Rock from the Crypt.
He was trying for a Rock from the Crypt song.
But I was thinking about Thin Lizzy.
And then I added a guitar solo.
Wait a minute, this sounds really familiar.
Hey, do I get a lyric credit on this?
Yeah.
For which part?
Come join the band.
I'm the drummer.
Yeah, okay.
Because it used to be, I'm the band.
I joined
no, it was not going to be. There was no way I would sing that.
It was I joined the band.
I wrote that. I wrote the lyric. I wrote it.
Yeah. Because it got reworked because I'm not Ian.
Yeah.
Exactly. It got reworked to like your actual own perspective.
Yeah.
We kind of wanted to make it about fans.
And I made we made sure to do this because I got really mad that I was the only one that without things. Because it was always like Sean and Craig and
here's
Ian.
here's the
Dirt Bike Choir.
Like, oh.
And me!
Our show is like
Chilling's coming in.
Fine.
It's funny, I do like that we introduce ourselves in the very last song and be like, this is who we are, I'm gonna give
you
goodbye.
Well, you can't have the national anthem at the end.
You could actually have it.
You can't. We'd have to rework all of the words.
Well, at sporting events, they have
the
national
anthem. Here comes Ian. Here's Ian, coming up.
But at the Olympics, you have the national anthem at the end.
Oh, this is the first time
when you win. We won. This is the gold medal banner raising.
This is like literally the first time I actually heard the recording of this.
Ian Thomas Day.
That's your sound destruction device.
Yeah, sound destruction device.
I think that is the...
No, that was the bad comrade.
Or the bad comrade.
Bad comrade.
Is it all caps at the end?
Is that in the town of Radium?
It's in the town of Radium.
So we didn't... I don't think we complimented the record enough while we were doing that. You want to do it again? Like...
Yeah. The commentary for it is basically...
How great is this record?
This is the best.
Lori, you did great. We killed it.
Anyone who actually listened to all of that,
if you're a Polaris judge, you should nominate the commentary for the Polaris Prize. Not the record, the commentary.
The one was doing it, and he goes, do you remember that Tom Petty video where he's like wearing the big top hat, and he's in the, I don't know, like the Alice in Wonderland thing?
Here
yeah, and I go, yeah, don't come around here no more, and he goes, that's what she looks like. Tom Petty.
Yeah, there is a certain... Yeah, I get it. Like, there's certain girls that look like Tom Petty.